It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we were both just saying, since we're sitting here together in the studio, that it is such a pleasant day out there.
Unbelievably not hot and humid.
Yeah, 2 weeks left in the month of August, and it's just, you know, I guess the only thing I can relate it to, it's like an August day in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it feels like an October day here.
Yeah, it really does. And it's just so nice. Adam said they were outside eating dinner last night in Jack's Beach, and it was perfect. So, man, it just keeps getting better and better. Don't tell anybody.
No.
But there's enough of us now, I think. Pretty much full up. You know, lock the door at the border and all that stuff. And the rest of us will just sit back and enjoy it. Anyway, for all the regulars, thanks for always being here. Stay tuned in, as you tend to do week after week after week. And if you're new to the show, whether you found out by accident or left your radio on or if somebody was telling you about it, again, just stick around for the whole thing because you're always going to learn something. And, of course, we will talk about whatever we want to talk about for the next hour, unless you would rather talk about something different. And lucky you, you get to do that. Just pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255 with whatever question or comment you might have, preferably related to some aspect of finance, which is a pretty broad subject when it comes to people and their money. And we'll put you on the air immediately, and we'll talk about whatever you would like to talk about. We will, as usual, have a trivia question after the first break. And prior to that, we're going to have a little fun because we're going to talk about the market this week. And the market this week was pretty much fun.
It was a lot of fun. That downturn was the worst downturn I've ever seen. Yes. I really expected it to last longer, but it came and went. And I mean, does anyone even remember it at this point? What a strange bout of volatility and trading we saw.
Yeah, I'm not sure I brought it. I was going to read the letter we sent out to our clients and friends this week so you could hear it, because it was dead on, or I wouldn't read it.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
But it was because it was such an interesting time. So if I can find it.
Okay. I have it. I can pull it up at the break. Okay. But just a few weeks ago, it was, every headline on that Monday was market crash. And it did feel a bit like a crash at the time. But I guess you found the letter?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just finish this.
Yeah, I'll do that after.
So last Monday, the VIX spiked more than 40 points, which was the largest spike on record going back to 1990. So it did feel like a crash at the time. That same day, the VIX closed 27 points below its high and that made the largest intraday decline on record. So that all happened in one day.
That was like three times its value yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
That was so weird.
It was. It's a great example of why just sitting tight when the market hits some volatility for no good reason is almost always the right move. Why did everyone panic last Monday? I don't know. It just was one of those things. There was some economic news that they didn't like, and they got uptight over the weekend and decided to just sell everything.
Herd mentality.
For sure. So with all of this, there's actually been some good news that came out of it. The breadth of the market, meaning the number of stocks that are moving higher, has improved greatly from last quarter when you saw just seven mega cap tech stocks lead the way higher. The economic news this week was also pretty positive, with jobless claims coming in lower, the lowest level since July. Inflation data came in at or below expectations, and retail sales came in better than expected, suggesting that maybe the consumer is not pulling back as much as we thought. As with everything in post-COVID America, there's no clear picture of the economy today, and figuring out what will happen next is almost impossible. I still would venture to guess that if you went and sampled 100 random people at the town center today, at least 50 of them would tell you we're in a recession. Well, they break out their credit card to buy some luxury goods.
Adding to the $1.3 trillion credit card debt that we're sitting on already.
Yeah, but the average bank account is 15% higher than it was in 2019. Yeah. So people still have some more money than they did when times were really good.
Very few things bring a smile to my face more than that one.
Yeah, that was an interesting stat that I read this morning. Mm-hmm. This was one of the best weeks in the market across almost every asset class that I can remember. And I'm not saying that facetiously. I really don't remember a week as good as this. It was almost every single ETF I looked at for the week was up. And not just up more than 2.5%. The Dow was up 2.9, the S&P was 3.9, and the NASDAQ was up 5.3. Those numbers are, that's a decent year.
Yeah.
In large caps, growth outpaced value with the S&P growth index up 5.2% versus the value index up 2.4%. But in the small and mid cap space, value actually performed slightly better than growth, rising 2.8 versus 2.4. The best performing sector was technology. It was up 7.7% for the week. Consumer discretionary was just behind that at 5%. Not a single sector of the S&P was down, but utilities, communication services, and energy were all up the least with gains around 1.1%. International stocks, kind of the same story. Japan led the way higher with a 6.1% gain. Japan's market has been extremely volatile lately, a lot of that having to do with their interest rate decisions. Italy, Germany, and Israel all saw gains of over 4%. China and India lagged with gains of just 1%. The all-world index was up 3.8, while emerging markets were up 3.2. Commodities were flat for the week. That was about the only, and that's not even really bad news. They were flat. The gold and silver both posted large weekly gains. Natural gas and agricultural commodities were down modestly, giving the overall index that flat level. And fixed income saw a nice weekly gain with about 0.5% on falling interest rates. We saw PPI and CPI data released this week, and as I mentioned, it looked better than expected. PPI increased by 0.1% month over month, which made the year-over-year number 2.2%. So PPI is the producer price index, that's manufacturers. So that tends to lead to better CPI numbers, which is the consumer price index, which was up 0.2%. The annual number for that dropped below 3% to 2.9%. That's the lowest reading since 2021. So good news there as well. Now, all you politicians, pay attention. This does not mean prices are falling. This just means they're going up at a much more normal rate than we've been seeing over the last 4 years. One area where prices are falling, though, is durable goods. Inflation on rent is also slowing down, although the inflation there remains much higher than the overall rate at 4.2%. Retail sales for July, I mentioned them earlier as well, they came in much better than expected, rising 1% versus the expected 0.4%. Retail sales are up just 2.7% year over year, meaning when they're adjusted for inflation, they're actually down for the year. So you're just paying more for the same or less amount of goods. So overall, that doesn't paint a great picture of the economy, but it's not a terrible picture either. So go figure.
No, and one thing that pops out of all those numbers you were talking about, used cars dropped a little over 10% last month.
Mm-hmm. As they needed to.
Yeah, we've been reporting for several weeks now that market is starting to normalize. So they got up so high that you couldn't really buy a good used car. Now it's coming down, so it's a good time to start shopping. All right, we got to pay a few bills. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you by First Coast Alarm. But for the first time, it's now brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. And Adam said he even dropped by to say hello and drop off some prizes this week at the office. So congratulations to Paul and to us for being able to represent him and give him a plug every single week. Now, what I don't know for sure is if the phone number I have will work for him.
The same number will
work. Same number?
Yeah, I believe. Well, it's still called... That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen here. I know this number will work.
It does
Kenny
work.
Is still
yeah.
there. Yeah. 904-636-7888. And again, Paul Lloyd, you might get Ken Bales on the phone, and they are working together. It's just the person at the top of the masthead has changed a little bit, and we wish them continued success. And we both have met and worked with Paul, and it was a very good fit. He's a good man.
He is.
One little thing to wrap up quickly. in all the things that went on in the market this week, the earnings season wrapped up. It's sort of the unofficial slash official end of the earnings and came out fine. The beat rates for earnings per share, 68.5%, and the revenue beats were 61.8%, and both of those are solidly in the top half of results over any reasonable period of time, and we should all be very happy about that, because let's face it, we don't want to be in a recession. There are plenty of things that look like we might be going into one. There are plenty of people who think we're already in one, but then again, the first-time unemployment claims dropped again.
They did.
Just no,
and they've never
substantial
even,
signs.
They've never even crossed 250. That's the signal,
right?
That things might be getting bad.
Although they sure scared the heck out of it a couple weeks ago.
Did, yeah, but they did not actually hit it. So, and one or two numbers over that, I wouldn't worry too much about. Yeah. When you start seeing a streak of five, then I would be a little worried.
Yeah. Well, this little thing I'm about to read from you was our little communique to our people. And I don't normally read on air, but I don't normally take to the streets, so to speak, with writing emails and communications to clients and such. But looking back on this one, it seems so appropriate for a couple of reasons. And I started out that anybody who's been with us any length of time knows how seldom we do this. So when we do it, there's got to be a reason. And that reason came last week when we had something of a, almost like a panic sell going on. And I know at that point, most of our clients don't bother to call us because they know what we're going to say anyway, because we've trained them pretty well. But I know damn well that they're nervous.
Oh, yeah.
And so were we.
We were. Frankly. And that's why we decided to do the email.
Exactly. So last week, Wednesday, was a huge up day based on the Fed doing what they said they'd do. Thursday and Friday, however, saw a reversal of attitude that turned into action. On both days, equities gave back their recent gains. The hangover lasted through the weekend, and as we write this, market futures are down significantly. Dow futures are currently bouncing around the 1,000 down mark, and NASDAQ futures are negative by a similar amount. The opening will not be fun, and after that, we'll watch and see what happens. Two points come to mind looking at this action. First, the level indicated by the futures, a drop of this magnitude suggested by futures, would take both the Dow index and the NASDAQ composite all the way back to the levels that we haven't seen since early to mid-June. And yes, that's June this year. While this is no guarantee, a correction has been expected for some time. We just never know when. Second, the Fed, while supposedly independent, is unlikely to let this situation go unnoticed. Action is suggested and may well occur. Whatever the end game for this turmoil, doing anything rash is unlikely to serve as well. Following the past 20 drops of this magnitude, the market has generally been up nicely within 3 months. Long term, which is the way we all invest, it is never smart to bet against the American business community. Many of you are already hedging your equity positions using what we call the Z funds, which are protected on the downside a bit, and they will fit nicely into action like this. Everyone stay safe out there as Hurricane Debbie dumps some serious water on us all, and wish the people of Georgia and South Carolina well. It won't be fun for them, but this too will pass. And you look back on it. The only thing I got wrong was I thought it might take 3 months to get it back, not 3 days.
Yeah, I really thought that we were in for it until November, probably. Mm-hmm. I didn't think we'd bounce back like that.
I think we're going to be talking a lot more in the next several days about hedged equities. It's a concept whose time is dependent on your age, I guess, partly. The time is ripe for these things. And these people that Adam's been working with have really come up with some nice formulas. And it's moving over into other markets, too. And over the next few weeks, I'm going to tell you a lot more about it. But that's enough of that today, I think. All right. Big news this week was we're going to whip inflation now. Oh, wait, that was the 70s, wasn't it? Anybody got their old win button in the closet backward? Might be time to pull it out.
The problem with talking like that is that prices are not going down.
No.
They're not going to. It's just not going to happen. Certain things will fall. Commodities, food prices could very well fall. But overall, housing is probably, I don't think, is in going to see any kind of substantial correction. Durable goods, I don't think you're going to see huge price reductions. I just don't see it. So we're kind of stuck at this level, and it's going to take a while for wages to catch up, but that's what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We can't go backwards. If we do, that means I would guess we would be in a serious recession if we start seeing prices fall.
I agree.
Tackling the price side is not really where we need to go. We need to work on the wage side.
Yeah, anybody who can make an X knows the supply and demand theory. We have on the phone. Good morning, Phil.
Phil, you there?
It looks like it dropped.
Is he there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Hey, Phil.
Good morning.
Is this the bad reason? This is Phil. I had 2 ERs with one extended stay, so I'm on very borrowed time, but they're moving out my major surgery. So, luck in a couple weeks, I should be all right. Van Wees Extraordinaire, are you live from Monaco? Your 185-foot yacht, or are you in the a side saddle? I'm glad we're not in the Middle East. I didn't hear the trivia question, but what I want to say is that you are so smooth, you are so fine, that your professionalism is outstanding all the time. For this old colonel, but I retired as a general selectee, you're the best of the best.
Thank you, and you just reminded me of something. I gave credit for the trivia question, but I didn't read it.
You didn't read it, did you?
I'm very weak, but I'm at home with two nurses, and one's can be a sumo wrestler, and the other one's her daughter is a knockout. Look over there in the corner.
Stay busy. Say,
do we have a trivia question yet, or not yet?
Yeah, right here. What percentage of Americans believe that their tax burden is already too high?
33%, and I'm probably too high.
What was your answer?
33%, sir.
You're too low.
Oh, wow.
I know. Shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know what? When Angela, of course, she missed me, but she was on a roll. There's no biggie, because we're quite like I am with you guys, over the next 2 years.
But sure.
Yes. When Angela does your thumbs up, thumbs down, one up, one down, and I'll tell you what, even for first time caller waiting for you guys to come, I gotta listen to the realtor before I get the financial, and I'm a financial geek, But anyway, here and there, so it's just really, really nice that she does that, and it's because she cares. Now, do you remember? I'll finish up shortly because I get blood pressure and meds 3 times a day, up to 17 meds now, but it's keeping me alive. When you present what you do, like she does, and even if I was say I just started listening last week, and I say, I got to listen to these guys again. And then, of course, you can actually, there's a way to go around the world through PBS and somebody else. You can tap into a network on your laptop, and you can hear Howard and Ed and Angela and you guys. But I don't know how to do it, but I don't travel anymore. But you're just so from the, even if I didn't know your third show, you're from the heart. You care. And I'm sorry for all the younger people out there. I think the two brothers are 40 and 42, and I'll be 84 next year, I think. But you guys are the best of the best. Don't change. And I'm going to let you go. And if you hear me next, even if I'm in rehab in the hospital or whatever, I don't do rehab in rehabs. I do it at home with whomever has to be there. It's not about the money. But hopefully keep the prayers going. And if I make it to next Saturday, I will call in and try to get a shot at the trivia question and listen to the best of the best. What did Jackie Gleason say in 1954? Gentlemen, you're the greatest. And he taught my mobster uncle, Harry, to shoot pool in Lower Manhattan when he wasn't a Jackie Gleason famous guy. He was actually better than Willie Moscone, but he never played him.
Yeah, and he did his own shooting in the movie The Hustler.
He runs 365 balls on a street. Game, one rush at a time.
All right.
Well, that means you didn't lose money yet, maybe, huh?
Yep. Stay ornery.
Good luck with your surgery.
Yep. Appreciate the call. Thanks. Bye. Nobody's going to want to take him yet, are they?
No, I think
he's nowhere near done.
He's good, yeah.
Yeah, nowhere near done. Okay, I apologize for getting carried away with the trivia question that didn't happen, but let me repeat it. We got a few seconds here. What percentage of Americans believe that their tax burden is already too high? And it's bigger than a third. So you will be probably a little bit surprised if I know our listeners, and I think we know them pretty well at this point. So give it a shot. The lines, we're going to take a quick break, and the lines will reopen again shortly, 904-222-8255, and we can do that or anything else you'd like to talk about. Other than that, I got a few good news items and a couple other just fun things. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And we still have the trivia question open now that I've given it out. What percentage of Americans believe that their taxes are already too high? And it's a number that's more than a third. And it's always fun to talk about these things. You will note, if you're a long-term listener, or you'll find out if you're a short-term that who just found us, that our trivia questions always have a point. There's something about them that's significant for individuals or for the country or whatever it is. So it's always fun when people call in and take stabs at them. You know one thing for sure. The range of this one cannot exceed 100%.
That is true.
So it's already there corralled for
above
you.
Above 33 and below 100.
Yeah. Adam wants to talk about one of our, well, actually, it goes back to one of my questions over the last, I've been doing this for about 23 years now, and one of the questions I ask myself a lot is, are the people who are really bad, rotten people who are in our business, are they our best friends or our worst enemies?
Yeah, it's a good question.
It is. And I haven't answered it yet.
No, I mean, they give the industry a bad rap, but then when you're one of the, or at least feel like you're one of the good ones, it makes you stand out in a positive way. So I don't know is the answer, but
well, we know which one this guy is.
There's no doubt about this one. The SEC has obtained a preliminary injunction against Drive Planning LLC and its CEO and founder, Russell Todd Burkhalter. What did Mr. Burkhalter do? Well, he made promises about a real estate venture that he was putting together, and it was going to pay 10% interest every 3 months.
I'll sign.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit too good to be true, doesn't it?
A lot too good to be
true. So what happened? He collected about $300 million from a bunch of clients who wrote a check to this Drive Planning for him to invest on their behalf. And it turns out he did invest it on their behalf. He purchased a $3.1 million yacht, a $2 million condo, and $4.6 million on, I guess this isn't an investment so much as just an expense, but $4.6 million on private jets and car services. And so he then used the rest of it to make 10% payments to the original investors, which basically is just a giant Ponzi scheme. And now he's probably going to end up in jail. But that $300 million is most likely gone. So I feel bad for the people that did it. But where did they go wrong? In this situation, they made one major mistake. It's not that I can't understand why some shyster is able to convince you of something, because the people are out there. They're very slick. They're very put together. He probably seemed really legit. But when it came time to invest your money and he said, write me a check, big, huge warning sign. Your planner should not take your money. It should go to a custodian that you can log on to and see at any time and know exactly how much is in your account. And we've said this 100 times, but that it always, 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 if there's one thing that these things have in common, it's that they wrote a check to the person and never knew where the money was actually going.
Yep. So anybody out there who's doing business or is about to do business with any kind of a financial guru or helper or advisor of any sort, if you write a check to that person, and there's one thing you have to do before you mail it or drop it off at his door, and that's to kiss your money goodbye, because you're not going to see it again.
Nope.
And quite frankly, people, it's your own damn fault.
That, I mean, I do feel bad for the people who got duped, but when you hear 10% returns per quarter, you should be very suspicious.
Oldest question in the book. If it sounds too good to be true, comma, figure it out. It, you know, we bring these things up not so much to make us look good. We bring them up because they happen, and you have to know about it. The more times you hear about them, the more wary we hope you become. So simple rules, never write the check to the person, and make sure it's on an independent, third-party, well-known website that you can access 24/7 anywhere with an internet connection. That's the start of success right there. All right, I want to spend a little time talking about Social Security. We are sneaking up very quickly on the date where it is. I guess you'd say it's the trust fund is running out, and it's really hard to even put into words because they spent the trust fund years ago. But there is a pile of IOUs in a filing cabinet in West Virginia that they call the trust fund, and whenever Social Security needs more money, they pull one of those out and rip it up, and then they print money to go back to the people in Social Security. And when the last of those has been ripped up, then all of a sudden, by law, the benefit payments to everyone, existing and otherwise, will be cut by whatever amount those IOUs are funding now. The estimates are that everything will go down about 23%. And you and I all know people on Social Security, and you're talking, or at least one of them's talking to you if you're not talking to him, and we're not going to accept that what we've been told all our lives and what we paid into all our lives will suddenly be cut 23%. The politicians know that. They would be fired on the spot instantly.
Regardless of party.
Absolutely. It doesn't make a bit of difference. So what are we going to do about it? Well, over and over and over, you read things. People are suggesting things. But when you are running out of money, you have to either get more money or cut your expenses or something. You know how much money Medicare, I'm switching over to the other half of the payroll tax now for a minute. You know how much Medicare lost in 2023?
I don't.
You want to take a shot?
Nope.
You will be shocked. $12 billion.
Yeah.
Nothing. I would have guessed.
I would have guessed more.
Yeah, 10 times that minimum.
Yeah, in the hundreds at least, yeah.
So this isn't that hard. Social Security is a bigger version of Medicare, but it's not that hard.
No.
It can be fixed. So those of you who are into the political scene at all know the name Mazie Hirono. Mazie is a senator from Hawaii who has teamed up with a congresswoman from Hawaii, both of them uber liberals, and after a phone call, I'm going to tell you what they're going to do to save it.
Okay.
They think. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show as always.
Thanks so much. What's happening?
I was wondering, and I know this is not a political show.
Can be.
Financial show. Which president would be better for the economy, Harris or Trump? Because I worry about Trump and all the tariffs that he's going to levy.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I worry about Kamala because she's just a whack job.
What
would be your opinion as far as the economy is concerned?
Well, it's not a fair fight, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think we have a full picture of what Kamala would intend to do. She's given a basic outline yesterday or the day before of her policy, and it doesn't look...
Did I lose you?
No. Are we still there? Can you? Her policy did not look great. I will say I don't. I mean, price controls, really? Come on.
I would tell you the single difference that to me would change everyone's mind if they thought about it. If we elect Trump, the 2017 tax cuts will be made permanent.
Yes.
If we elect Harris, they will expire, and we will all get a gigantic tax increase, and the economy will suffer appropriately.
That is true. And also, you can, if you want to know how much your taxes will go up if Kamala is elected, simply by the tax cuts and or the tax the 2017 tax law expiring, go to the www.kamalataxcalculator.com. Put in your info. Just there's no personal info. It's just put in what you make, and it will tell you by default how much your taxes will go up when that law expires.
Yeah, for the average American household, it's about $2,400. And right now, when people have already been punished by about $10,000 a year
because of inflation,
yeah, that $2,400 would add insult to injury. Now, if there were other things that were vastly distorted, unequal, like if Trump would bring on World War III or something like that, we'd talk about it. But I'm just looking at the plain economics of everyday living, because that is what we are paid to do. And I see making those tax cuts permanent as the number one project for the next administration. Otherwise, a lot of other things are going to fail with it.
The other problem with the policies that Kamala laid out this week was that it's a lot of free money. Well, what got us in this situation? The government printing money. Mm-hmm. Nothing that she said, or there wasn't much on there that didn't involve printing more money. That is not a recipe for success when the inflation could very easily return. If we start cutting rates and printing more money, you're going to see inflation spike again. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yes, and I'm going to talk about price controls after this next break. And that, again, is a topic that should be on everyone's mind. It's not much fun. No one's perfect out there. There are no perfect proposals because I'm not running. Oh, wait, that's not the reason. But you know what I mean. Yeah. Anyway, Ron, assuming you can still hear us, do you want to take a shot?
I guess he dropped off. I think he couldn't hear us.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cut out on his end. But if you want to call back, that's fine. We'll give you another shot at the trivia. Meanwhile, we're going to have to take one final break. Adam's going to head out. He's got a soccer game to get to. I'll pick it up right after the break and go on thinking about or talking about things like price controls. Not a pretty sight. People, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee, and Adam just took off to get to a soccer game. So you're stuck with me for the next few minutes. So let's make use of them and go back to Ron. Hi, Ron. Thanks for calling back.
Hey, Steve. I'm sorry. I've been having trouble with my phone. I probably disconnected there.
Not a problem. What's happening?
I did hear your answer. I was listening on the radio. So
good.
That clarified what I was thinking. So.
Yeah,
I know who I'm voting for.
Yeah, I'm kind of a hardcore tax nut. I've watched it. You know, I've been around this planet for 74 years, and I've been paying attention the whole time. So I lived through the Kennedy cuts, and I lived through the Reagan cuts and the Bush cuts and the Trump cuts. And every time, the results were the same. The economy got better. The government took in more money, and people were happier. And a strange thing along the way was once those rates got cut and people really worked hard, including me in the 80s, because, my God, we had a high tax rate of 28% back then, so everybody I knew was working their butt off at the time trying to make more money. But when all of that happened, everybody was happy, and there had been a lot of talk, a lot of whining and crying and, you know, soul-searching and all that stuff, that the charities were going to suffer because people only donated money to charities because they got such a big write-off for them. Well, guess what happened? It didn't go that way. Charitable contributions went up when tax rates were dropped from 70 to 28. Why? Because people were happier. They were more content with their own situation. They were just as nice as they used to be, but they gave money and, yeah, they still got a deduction, but a small one. But come to find out, that isn't what motivates Americans to give money. It isn't the money they save, it's the good they can do. So it kind of makes you feel better about people in general. So just thought I'd bring it up. Anyway, do you want to take a shot at the trivia question?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the year I graduated junior high. 1967, so 67%.
Well, that's a little high, but okay. But I like it. It's a really good way to come up with a number. I'll tell you a story about that sometime. Not today, but it's funny. Funny as hell. All right, we appreciate it. Always good to hear from
you.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for the good job again.
Thanks again. Bye. All right, Mike, how goes it?
Hey, good morning, Steve.
What's happening?
I don't know. I'm just can't wait for November. You know, we've had a taste of socialism for the last 5 to 10 years. We'll have it in full force if a certain somebody wins. At least I'll be able to go into either Winn-Dixie or Publix and see beautifully low prices.
That would be nice. And there are some things we don't want the price to come down on. Food is not one of those because it is all commodities and transportation. So it would be nice. People mix up the term deflation with disinflation. We're undergoing some current disinflation, meaning that the rate of price increase is slowing down. And in many things, you don't want deflation. But in commodity-oriented things like food and gasoline, you want deflation. You want those prices down so we can actually afford them. Wouldn't it be nice to walk into Publix or Winn-Dixie and instead of taking the little cart, take the big one again like we used to?
Absolutely. I was being a little sarcastic there because everything I read and know about history is and looking at the current Venezuela as opposed to the Venezuela back in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Price controls don't seem to work. And some of the other things being proposed by the Democrats, like giving people $25,000 for houses or raising the child tax credit to $6,000. Most that I read say these things are inflationary and they just don't work.
Those houses will be $25,000 more expensive than they would be without it.
Because absolutely.
The first-time buyers are competing with the other buyers, and they get that $25,000 for free. So they're all of a sudden in a better position than the other buyers.
Absolutely. Hey, Steve, just to change subjects for a while.
Yeah.
One of the last wishes of my girlfriend was to, mm-hmm. you know, do something for her grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something you and Adam might be able to help with, where I could put aside some money for them, you know, similar to like a grant of trust or something like that, where I could get a tax benefit, or because I'm not related, I could obviously set up some money for them, but not get a tax benefit. Is that something you
yes,
could discuss?
We can. We don't do things like trusts and so on, but we can advise you as to the impact. There's a double whammy. It's do you get anything right up front from it? And that's generally no. And then it's, well, what's the situation? How can we maximize the value to the kids? How old are they, Mike?
Well, one is about 16, 17. The other one is 23.
Okay, so educationally, we're probably not looking at a 529 at this point. It's
correct.
Too late for that. So let me ask this part. Are they employed?
No.
Okay, no earned income in either case, right?
No.
All right, so we would rule out a Roth IRA on that basis alone because they have to have
right.
earned income. So now you're looking at gifting, basically, or setting aside a trust or something like that. And, yes, we can talk about that. Call us at the office or make an appointment for a phone call or whatever you want to do. And
we'll
do some just brainstorming on the concept.
Great. Thank you for that, Steve. I
Absolutely.
Appreciate it very much.
Anytime.
I will call.
Anytime.
All right.
All right. Trivia question between 33
yeah,
and 67.
Yeah, I'll take a stab. Thanks, Dad, Ron and Phil
yeah.
Gates. Sort of a bracket.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say 63%.
That's a pretty good guess, but it's a little high.
Okay, very good.
Right.
I will call the office. Have a great weekend, and thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. We always appreciate hearing from you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's so true. So many things, too. It's very hard to get a personal break when you're giving money to somebody. So very often, the best way you can make yourself feel better about it is just to know that the break that they're getting is the best that can happen. And we'll have to talk about a lot of things personally, because it gets personal very fast in those things. All right, I'm going to spend a couple minutes talking about price controls. Who knew that price controls go back literally thousands of years? I didn't until I started researching this thing. There is evidence of price controls back in the Egyptian era, about 3rd century B.C., and also Babylonians, ancient Greeks, and the Roman Empire. Then, jump forward to the founding of this country, there were price controls tried in the George Washington's army, and on since then. Those of you fortunate enough, I use that term lightly, to have lived through the Nixon wage and price controls, you probably remember better than anybody what a complete and utter disaster that whole thing is. There is no quicker, more thorough, and more devastating way to impact free markets than to use price controls. Something you might not think about a lot is that price controls can be two ways. You can have maximum prices. You can also set minimum prices. Neither one of them is a very good idea, and I would defy anybody to tell me more than an occasional small and insignificant case where they might have worked a little bit. And other than that, they're always a disaster. Where are they used most of the time? Drug prices. You've seen that already. The Biden administration has started with insulin, except for the fact that they didn't start it. Trump actually did it. They just took over and took credit for it. But they got the price of insulin down. And that saved, on paper, at least a whole bunch of money for Medicare. That money was then robbed from Medicare and put into the Green New Deal projects like the Inflation Reduction Act. So thanks a lot for that, or should I say thanks for nothing for that. The minimum wage is a price control. It doesn't work either. Minimum wages are just ridiculous tools to make people feel better, and they don't work. All you're going to do by imposing price controls is to limit production, limit quantity, create shortages, and make people miserable. And I wish I could tell the people who are currently in power and wanting to be even more in power that it won't work. But it sounds good to people. So let's take a company like Kroger that provides for us all the things we need to survive day to day. And for that, they are rewarded with a whopping 1.6% profit margin. Now, if that's gouging, what are they going to be limited to? 1.5? 1.0? You're not going to accomplish one little thing with wage and price controls. We got to shout it from the treetops, people. I don't like what's going on up there, and I don't like the way people are jumping on it because it sounds good. If it sounds too good to be true, as we said, you know how to answer that. But I appreciate everybody listening and calling. It is 60% of the people who think their taxes are already too high. If we allow the Trump tax cuts to expire, that number is going to jump way up, and nobody's going to like it. Thanks for listening. See you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.